at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Her story is not a new one. It is a story that needs to be told, however, a story of losing. Losing a lot and gaining it all back and then losing it again over and over. And we're not talking about money. We're talking about weight. Michelle Pettis has had a decades-long struggle with weight and now tells the tale in a new book titled Leaving Large, The Stories of a Food Addict. And she joins me now to talk about her journey and how she might inspire others to live a healthier and more fulfilling life. If you have a comment or a question, if you are struggling with your weight, if you are struggling with food addiction, give us a call right now at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I'm sure that Michelle will have some words for you. You can also tweet me at HFisherWHUR or follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Hey, Michelle, how are you?
Hey, Harold. I'm great. I'm just glad to be here. How you doing?
Thank you so much for being a part of this program, and I am fine. I am really excited to talk to you about this because I have so many questions, not only about your journey, but also how you might be able to help some other people who may be going through some of the same kinds of struggles and challenges. My first question is, you talk about losing 700 pounds. And at first blush, some persons may think, oh my God, if she lost 700 pounds, just how large was she? Can you explain that for me, please?
Yeah, so I will. So that 700, I really think it's more like 900, but I don't think anybody would believe the 900. So But it's a 40 years of gaining and losing, gaining and losing. From the time I was in my 20s to the time I was in my 60s, I went through this really vicious cycle of I would gain 30 pounds, then I would lose 40 pounds, I'd gain 50 pounds, I'd lose 50 pounds, the cycle just repeated itself over and over again. And you start multiplying, 50 pounds times, 5 years, every 5 years, the number gets up there.
Mm. This is a situation that you describe as food addiction. How did you know?
Oh, wow. I don't know that I really figured out that I was a food addict until I wrote the book.
Really?
And what I thought for many years was just I liked food more than skinny people. I would have friends that were thin, and they would say, "Oh my goodness, I love food." And I would look at them and say, "You're a liar. How could you love food and be that size? You couldn't." but that was what I thought. I was definitely in error, but when I started just to kind of unpack my behavior around food and I started to do research on compulsive behavior and addictive behavior, there's one story that I write in the book. I actually just posted it on my Facebook about eating 60 fruitcake cookies.
One sitting?
Well, in one sitting, but it was over a short period of time. It was definitely over the course of a day. You get four, then you eat them, and then you come back, and you get four more, and then get four more. And I'm not eating healthy food throughout the day. So I really am hungry. I'm hungry, but I'm addicted to the sugar. I'm addicted to this cookie because of the memories that I associate with the cookies. It's a complex and layered issue, but yeah, not in one sitting, but going back, get four, come back, get five more, come back, eat those, come back. Yeah.
If you If you didn't realize that there was a food addiction until you read the book, this is a new book. So when did you realize that you had a problem?
I've known that I've had a problem since for decades, but I could never wrap my arms around it. I could never get control of it. Here's the thing, Harold. You know, for years I could lose the weight, but I could never keep it off. That's the issue. Losing it but not being able to maintain it. And it wasn't until this last time around when I sat and I really started to peel back. It's just like what you said in the intro, mind over matter, to start to really get a handle on what I believed about food, what I thought about food, what my feelings were about food. And when I started to unpack that and get real about that and understand the connection between food and feeling, not just emotion, but just feeling, then that made all the difference. That made all the difference for me.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Michelle Pettis, who is the author of the new book, Leaving Large, The Stories of a Food Addict. And we're talking about her journey of weight loss and weight gain, the mind over matter battle of food addiction. If you have a comment or a question for Michelle, give us a call. So explain that, if you can, about really understanding the emotional part.
Okay. All right. Let me tell you just a quick story.
And sure.
This was a breakthrough story for me. I am from the South. I'm from the South. I'm from the country, little country town in East Texas, Marshall, Texas. I want to give a shout out to my Marshall.
I'm actually familiar with Marshall, Texas.
Are you really?
Yes. Yes. I had a friend from, and it's not, and it's not actually, had a friend that I met in Alabama years ago, and she did not pronounce it Marshall. She pronounced it Marshall. So, but please go right ahead. I'm familiar with Marshall.
Right. Same place. But nonetheless, this was probably in the 90s, and I'm on a farm and grew up kind of on a farm, and I'm at my uncle's farm, and we're having watermelon. And I say to my uncle, Billy, would you like some of this watermelon? And he said, I don't eat watermelon. And I listened to him, and he didn't say I don't want it, nor did he say I don't like it. He said, I don't eat it. And I said, well, what do you mean? What does that mean? I don't eat it. Do you not want it right now? Would you like some later? And he's like, no, I just don't eat it. And I'm like, what? Everybody eats watermelon. I'm trying to pester him. And he finally tells me, and I'll shorten the story, that when he was a kid, he and some buddies stole a watermelon from a neighbor's garden. And my grandfather was a church trustee. My grandfather was a railroad worker. He found out about it. And the two things that a kid that just stole a watermelon, the two things that he doesn't want to face is a church trustee, railroad worker. Mm. My grandfather beat him within an inch of his life. He gave him a beating he clearly never forgot. And when my uncle told me the story, at the end of the story, I said to him, well, Billy, do you think maybe the lesson was supposed to be thou shalt not steal?
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle just looked at me dead in my eye and said, I don't eat watermelon. Now, the importance of that story didn't hit me when he told it to me in the mid-90s, but it hit me when I started this last leg of this journey. And I sat because I needed an answer. I needed this to be the last time I lost weight. I needed to be able to keep it off this time. And I prayed, Lord, just give me the right questions because I am not making the connection. And that story bubbled up in my spirit. And when I heard it and I thought about it, I said, my God, that's it. My uncle's experience around that watermelon, around that food, was so painful that he never ate it until the day he died for 70 years, 70 plus years. He never ate it because of the feeling and the connection that he made with watermelon in his spirit. It was too traumatic. It was too painful. And as I sat with that story, I said, oh, my God, that is it. That's what uncontrolled eating is about. That is what yo-yo dieting is about. That's what cravings are about, is that we have these associations. I had these associations to certain foods, fruitcake cookies being one of them, that was so pleasurable, so wonderful, that whenever I wanted a wonderful experience, I went to that food. And I thought it was the food that I wanted, and it wasn't the food. I wanted the memory. I wanted the experience. But it was so linked to an event that I couldn't separate it. And so in my book, I go through the stories, and I go through all the stories that I can remember of how I made the wrong connections to certain foods that kept me trapped, in a body that wasn't serving me, that kept me in bondage to food, and I unpacked them in all those stories.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Michelle Pettis. She is the author of the new book, Leaving Large, The Stories of a Food Addict. If you have a comment or a question about her journey or even your journey regarding food addiction, struggles with weight loss, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, which brings me to another point as we now are in the course of this holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
All people, but I would argue particularly for Black people, there are many pleasant memories that have to do with the holiday season around the Thanksgiving table, the Christmas dinner table, the New Year's Day table, the gorging of oneself during these holidays. Is that part of that emotional memory eating?
You absolutely. You nailed it with that. Not only would I say it is a part of it, I would say it is at the heart of it. And one of the things is that, you know, we hear this and people say it, and I said it, I'm an emotional eater, right? I'm an emotional eater. And people will say that and just kind of let it hang in the air and not say why. Now, why are you an emotional eater? Not only that, what emotion? And as you talk about the holidays and Thanksgiving and Christmas and all of that, you know, on a certain level, food is our love language. Food is how we express affection. Food is how we express caring. People say, you know, I cook with love, right?
I do, because I love to cook.
Of course. And here's the thing. If you love to cook and you cook with love and you share your gift, you share your food in love. And if you do that with a person who is a people pleaser, who loves to please you and loves to eat, right, then they may end up eating more than what their body actually requires because they know how happy it makes you. Right. And so the thing that I got clear on and the thing that made the difference for me was when I got clear on this is that even though we put food at the center of everything, the only thing that it solves is hunger. That's the only purpose of food and eating is nutrition and nourishment. But we make it for other things. Yeah. We closely align it with other things, so closely that we sometimes cannot separate those things. And once we separate the food from the feeling, then we can get onto it. I was able to get onto a path of wholeness and health and wellness because the food is not the thing. It's the memory that we want. It's the experience that we associate with it. It's the event that we associate with it. I had to get to myself to a place where if someone would share something with me in love, right? They cook something for me because my sweetie's a chef And when I met him, I was on the way down, right? And then once I met, and I had surgery, and then he started cooking, and I started eating because I wanted to appreciate his gift. And the more I ate, the more he cooked, and it was just, I call it in my book, a delicious, vicious cycle.
Yeah.
But I knew that I didn't want to show up that way. I wanted health. And so I had to stop. But when I stopped, I told him about this path that I needed to be on, and he started cooking healthier meals for me.
Yeah, I was about to say to that point, I love to cook, but the way that I cook now for myself is healthier.
And that's a key point. But the thing about it is back to the season that we're in now. And Thanksgiving and Christmas and all the big holiday meals. I was just at an event a couple of days ago, and we're at the table, and someone was eating, and this is what she said to me.
Hold that point. I need you to hold that point.
Okay.
Because I've got to take a break.
Okay.
And I'm going to let you finish that on the other side. Also, Misha calling from Baltimore and DeMarcus calling from D.C. I need you to hang on because we're going to hear from you as well. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about food addiction, weight loss, and changing your life. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion with Michelle Pettis. She has had a decades-long struggle with food and her weight. She talks about it in her new book titled Leaving Large, The Stories of a Food Addict. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Michelle, I left you with a cliffhanger. Please continue your point real quick.
Yeah, so I'm at this event, and the woman sitting across from me says, now I'm just eating to be eating. And so she recognized that she was full, but she continued to eat past the point of fullness. And that's not the first time I've ever heard someone say that. And not only that, I have said that myself. And so the fact that you could be in this spot and just eat for the sake of eating speaks to some pathology, right? It speaks to a problem. It speaks to a lack of understanding. It speaks to a food story that is going on, that is driving that behavior that we need to get in front of, that I needed to get in front of. So we all have these stories around the beliefs that we hold around food that are in our subconscious and our unconscious that determine what we do. Like, who grew up with, I certainly did, you better clean your plate.
Yes,
we don't
absolutely
throw away food in this house, right? Mm-hmm. So you go out to a restaurant where they serve a huge portion, Cheesecake Factory, but I won't call any names, and you feel compelled to eat everything on the plate, everything that they serve you, because you have been taught to clean your plate. You don't even recognize that you're full. And so my book is about 40 years of eating for the wrong reasons, eating because it was an activity, because the food was free, right? Mm-hmm. Because somebody, I might have already just eaten, but somebody invited me out to eat because it's an activity and something fun to do. Yeah, I'm gonna go eat. Or everybody else is eating. I don't want to be the only one without a plate. Or I go someplace and I don't know anybody there, but there's a buffet table, so I walk over to the buffet table, and at least I'm not standing there acting, you know, looking crazy because I don't have a plate in my hand.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, not the buffet. Woo.
Right.
Yeah. Let's see what Misha has to say, calling from Baltimore. Misha, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Hi. Are you able to hear me?
Yeah. Go right ahead.
So I suffer with a thyroid disease, and I've had the gastric bypass, and it's been over 12 years now, but my weakness is the sugar. And I love my cookies and the chips and then the popcorn with all the butter. Yes. And then after I eat it, I feel so guilty bad. Like,
yes.
Horrible.
Yes, yes. So Misha, I get it, right? I get it. And here's what I would suggest to you. Part of our issue and my issue is that when we're trying to control our weight, we focus on the food, right? The only thing we're thinking about is the taste. And that's the thing that becomes important. But you just said, you know, I love my popcorn, and I love sugar. What the mind over matter that Harold talked about earlier is you got to figure out what you love more. You got to get to the point where you have a body that you love more, that you love yourself more than you love the sugar and the popcorn, that how you want to feel, how you want to look, how you want to show up is more important than what that tastes like. And I'll give you this quick example. Years ago, I dated a guy that was a little younger, you know, right? He was a little younger, he was handsome, and I was all caught up because he was
now, you know, that's handsome. Another show, right?
Right.
But well, go ahead.
Do that. But he was younger and handsome. But after I got to know him, things came out in his personality that were distasteful to me. And his character, just different things, his personality just didn't work for me. And after a while, he stopped being attractive to me. It no longer mattered that he was attractive. It no longer mattered that he was younger, that he was interested in me, because I couldn't stand those things about him and how I felt being around him with those qualities. Just like I changed my mind about that man, that's how we change our minds about food. We can look at certain foods and say, oh my goodness, I love this. I love my wine. I love my candy. I love my sweets. I love my popcorn. But once we get real clear that those foods don't serve us, they don't give us the body that we want, they don't give us the life that we want, they don't give us the health that we want, they stop us from enjoying living the way that we want, they become less attractive and not even desirable. But we have to create a story that makes those things so distasteful to us, really, that we see the injury that those things are doing to our body that we don't want. We run from them rather than trying to eat them. And that's the mind over matter. When I look at a plate of French fries, I don't see a plate of French fries today the way that I saw them 10 years ago or 5 years ago or even 3 years ago. Oh, French fries. Oh, yeah, let me get some ketchup. Let me eat them with a chicken burger. They're greasy, they're crunchy, they're tasty, they're salty. I love them. That's what I thought in the past. Not now. I don't see anything in a French fry that gives me the body that I want, the health that I want, or not anything attractive about that. So we rewrite the stories that we see around certain foods to serve the body and the life that we want currently.
Okay.
We stop looking at the food that's in front of us, and we start visualizing and imagining and creating the body that we want. Mm. Does that make sense, Misha?
It does.
Yeah.
Mind over matter, and I have to become a stronger person in making those decisions.
Mm-hmm. And Misha, write it down.
Yes.
The thing to do is write it down. I say this from 40 years of doing diets all wrong. I'd pick them up, and the only thing that I would do, I would look at what could I eat and how much of it. What could I eat and how much of it?
And that's what I do.
Right, you focus on the plate, right? You stay focused on the plate. The way to get strong, the way to get past this is to focus on everything outside of the plate, and that will make the plate easier. You start staying completely focused on how you want to look, how you want to feel, how you want to show up. Put that on your refrigerator, put that on your phone, write that down on a piece of paper, tell your friends, put it in your closet, whatever that is. Read it, write that story every day, read it and reprogram your mind. That's the thing beyond the plate that you focus on. And then you start looking at the people in your world around your plate that make it difficult for you to stick to your plan, right? Then once you identify them, it doesn't necessarily mean that you don't hang around with them, but you have to get clear on people who are going to help you get to the goal that you want to get to, and the people that are going to be the blocks to your goal. Those people that are going to help you, in my book, I call them my angel warriors. They are people that see your beauty, that see you in your goal, that see you in the dress that you want to wear, that see you in the size that you want to be, that see you running with your kids. I don't know if you have grandkids. I don't know what you want to do, but they're the people that see it in your life for you before you see it. That's who you surround yourself with, the people that are going to help you get there. And then the things that are behind the plate. You start thinking about, why is it that I feel like I have to have popcorn? Why is sugar so important to me? What memories do I associate sugar with, right? That's the stuff that's behind the plate. You start unpacking that, and then you start realizing that it's not that important.
Yeah. Misha?
It's not that important.
Misha, thank you so much for your phone call, and good luck to you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. DeMarcus calling from D.C. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Hey.
Hey, I do well, my friend. That's a great story that you have. And, you know, I want to interject this. A lot of that, too, comes from Western culture living, our style of living over here. Because if you look, hello.
Go ahead. We're listening.
If you look at, you know, the rest of the world a lot, Americans are just big people. We celebrate, like you said earlier, we celebrate everything with food. Mm-hmm. Every time you turn around, it's a plate somewhere for something. Mm-hmm. And when you're trying to stay on the straight and steady path, and I know it's mind over matter, and it does happen for a lot of people, but a few more than the most. Every time you turn around, there are people around you, like you said, there are people around you that say, let's eat, mm-hmm. or we going out tonight, or let's have a fish fry Sunday. I had a cousin, I tell you not, he'd been home 100 times over, and each mm-hmm. and every time it was a fish fry for him. And I tell you, it was the craziest thing in the world. And I'm like, when I started getting shit, I'm like, why do we eat so much?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we constantly go to the grocery store so much, and we're wasteful. You see how wasteful we could be as people.
Yes.
And I was listening to it, and I was like, you know, she has a great story, and I want to interject something, and thank you very much.
Well, DeMarcus, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Michelle Pettis. She is the author of the new book, Leaving Large, The Stories of a Food Addict. I did want to ask you, there's a passage in the book that really struck me where you said you spent thousands of dollars on surgery. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So I tried almost everything out there to get my body to a place that I love. And when I said surgery, when I'm out talking and I say surgery, a lot of people think, oh, you had gastric bypass, you had the bypass. I didn't have the bypass, but I spent thousands of dollars on liposuction. Here's really what happened.
What had happened was
is that I had been exercising. I had been exercising and I had been changing my eating habits, but I had reached a plateau. And things weren't happening as quickly as I wanted them to happen. And I seen all this advertising about liposuction. And prior to that, let me add this. I had a breast reduction. right? I had a breast reduction, and when I went in to see the doctor said, "Well, you know, while we're in there, I can do a tummy tuck for you."
Mm.
And I'm like, "You what? You can do that? You could all at one time?" and as it turned out, the breast reduction. And I know that this is a tough subject for a lot of people, and it's a tough subject for a lot of Black women. But I was at a point where I was really trying to exercise more. And my breasts were just in the way. And I was feeling frustrated because I couldn't, I wanted it, but I felt like this was a physical impediment. And so the doctor said, "Yeah, you know, you're right. You know, it's causing you some back problems. It's causing you some chafing. There's some problems with your shoulders." They did the numbers. And I was medically, it became a procedure that insurance could cover. So it was medically necessary for my
mm-hmm.
But the tummy tuck was not. That was cosmetic, and I will tell you something. At the time that I had that surgery, that breast reduction and that tummy tuck, I was financially strapped. But what I felt like was this, is that I know how to make money. I can always make money back. But this body, this weight, has been an issue that has plagued me almost all of my life. And this, I see this as a way to get in front of it and get some confidence around my body. I needed that then. And so I got the breast reduction. And I mean, got the breast reduction and the tummy tuck. And once I got that, and you know, things look better. It gave me some hope. I was able to exercise, but then my hips and thighs and all that, I was out of proportion. It was like a tape measure. Couldn't go around my hips. And so I went back to this doctor and I said, he said, "Yeah, I can help you with that." And so he, did some liposuction and some shaping and some contouring. This was not a weight reduction plan, but it gave me an idea. It gave me a vision of hope of what my body could look like. And so once I got it, I was like, okay, I have had this liposuction. Now that I have it, I know I can maintain it. That's what I thought. But I had not done the mental work. I had not done the mental work and came up against what I called all these food stories that came flooding back. And I started to gain the weight back. Mm. And when I started to gain the weight back, I got afraid, and I went to a doctor that I was seeing, and I mentioned this in the book, and she said, "I can help you." And this is what she said. She said, "I can help you if you will follow this plan. If you will take these shots, you will not be hungry. You will not be hungry, and you will lose weight." And I believed her, and I trusted her. And that's what happened, right? She told me, "You're not going to be hungry," and I wasn't. And because the amount of food was so small, it made me start thinking about other things that were important. And I wasn't hungry, but I found myself still wanting to eat. And that's when I went to the dictionary and I looked up the definition of food.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I became clear that the only purpose of eating was nutrition. And it was like a light bulb. And that's when all of these other emotions, like eating out of jealousy and eating out of anger and eating out of frustration and eating out of fear and eating out of excitement and eating because it's an activity, eating because it's out of entertainment, when all of this started flooding my mind, eating because my friends are eating, because I don't want to feel like I'm left out, I don't want to feel deprived, that I had to start addressing those emotions. And so once I started to address those emotions and deal with food in an authentic manner and deal with those emotions in an authentic manner, that's when my life started to change. That's when the scale started to go down, because I stopped using food to either express emotion or suppress emotion. And we are here to live life. And we live life through emotion. And that's how overeating and obesity robs us, is because we use it to suppress the things that we are supposed to feel.
So let me ask you this, because being from Marshall,
mm-hmm.
Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming you still have family there.
I do.
Okay.
A little bit. Mm-hmm.
A little bit. And you mentioned you've got a sweetie who's a chef. And so you still have family in places, black folks.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with the members of your family, close or extended, or the members of your partner's family, close or extended, who eat just like so many people eat? They eat a lot. They don't mm-hmm. care.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with, oh, here comes Michelle again, and now she's got a book. And I, let's put Michelle at the kiddie table, because I don't want to hear it.
I'm really so glad you asked that question.
Because I know that there is that contingent in your family,
mm-hmm.
you know, that, mm-hmm. I mean, hands over the eyes when you mm-hmm. show up, no matter how good mm-hmm. you look.
Harold, that is certainly part of it, right? But that question speaks to something that is so important, and I hear it all the time. I hear people say, I need to do something about my relationship with food, or I don't have a good relationship with food. And I am here to tell you that I wish I never heard that statement, because we don't have a relationship with food. We shouldn't have a relationship with food. What we do with food is we manage it. We have relationships with people. And when we start to put food in its proper place, here's what's going to happen with people. People are going to rise up. I bring up the level of consciousness around food and eating with people that are around me, whether I try to or not, just by standing in my own relationship with myself. And here's what I mean by that. I used to think that my problem was I didn't have any self-control. I didn't have any willpower. I didn't have any self-discipline. And a lot of people think that, but that's not the thing. The thing is, if I don't have desire for pound cake, I don't have to use willpower not to eat it. If I don't have desire for pecan pie or sweet potatoes or mashed potatoes or potato salad or ribs, if I don't have desire for it because I see it for what it really is, I don't have to use self-control, self-discipline, or willpower because I don't have desire. I don't want it. I don't need it. And what happens when I go out to dinner and they bring the dessert tray, and Lord knows I have had plenty of bread pudding. I have had plenty of key lime pie. I have had plenty of peach cobbler. Love it all, but I don't eat it now. And when the dessert table comes around and I don't have it, somebody will invariably say, I wish I had your willpower.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what? You're not going to get dessert. I don't think I'm going to get any either. I raise the consciousness of the table just by being who I am, by standing in my own relationship with myself and knowing that that food is not for me. I'm not trying to be the food police and tell anybody else what to do about what they want to do. I just want people to know that if you start making solid decisions, smart decisions about something as you might think is insignificant about what you put in your mouth, you can change your life. When you change your mind, you change your body, you can change your life. And the same skill set, the same muscle that it takes to step into change, to step into transformation around food, is the same muscle that you use to step into transformation around your life and what you want to do in this world.
So you don't have cravings now at all?
You know what? I wouldn't say I have cravings, but I have this thing that may show up in my stomach. But because I'm mindful, I know the difference between that thing that shows up and hunger. And so you mentioned craving. So I'm going to give you my quick craving thing. My quick craving solution, for lack of a better word. So we must accept, I accept, that the only purpose of eating is to solve hunger
and it's for food and nutrition. So if I have a craving, or if anybody has a craving for something, I say eat something nourishing. Get a piece of protein, eat some vegetables, eat some fruit, get full. No matter what your craving is for, get full on something nourishing. And then you will know that you are full, that you are not hungry. And if you still have that craving, you know that that craving is rooted in an emotional place that needs healing. So it's not the craving for the food. You are craving the emotions that are associated with that food, because you know you're not hungry because you just ate. It's not hunger. It's this thing that's showing up in your spirit that tells you, I want this food, but it's not the food. It's the memory. It's whatever the feeling is that's associated with that food.
Well, I will tell you, and you speak about addiction.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, 21 years ago, I quit smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I mean, I, you know, let me be clear for everyone who's smoking. Mm-hmm. What were you smoking? Mm-hmm. You know, I was a nicotine addict. I, mm-hmm. I was at one point I smoked 3 packs of cigarettes a day.
Mm-hmm.
I still have cravings. As a matter of fact, I'm having one right now. Mm-hmm. Like, but because I don't buy cigarettes. First of all, they are obscenely and sinfully expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have them in the house on the rare mm-hmm. occasions when I have a craving. So I just ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you do with food if you have a food craving?
No. I lean into it. One of the things I mean by that. I'm real clear in understanding the difference between hunger and the desire to eat. And there are 3 questions that I ask myself before I put anything in my mouth. I ask myself, if this food, and because I do it so much, I ask the questions really quickly. They're just part of my consciousness. But in the beginning, I was a lot more deliberate about it. The questions are, if this food will not give me the body that I say that I want, why am I eating it? That's the first question. The second question is, why this food? Why now? Why this? Why now? And the third question is, am I hungry or am I something else? Those 3 questions are designed to interrupt the pattern of eating. And what I figured out for myself was that I was eating too much of the wrong things for the wrong reasons, and I was doing it unconsciously. And I needed to raise my consciousness about why I was eating what I was eating. Those questions did it. So once I get clear on those questions, then I can pivot. And so the other day I lost my car keys, and I was I lost my credit card.
Mm.
And I was frustrated and I couldn't find it. And I was in my office, I was in my apartment, I was in my car, and I couldn't find it. I went out to my car just one more time to look for this credit card. And when I got to the car, there was some sugar-free caramel sitting in the back seat of the car. I'm looking for my credit card. I see those caramels, and I feel this thing in my stomach, and I reach for the caramels.
And there's somebody in there in a red suit with some horns and a pitchfork.
No, in the back seat. But here's the thing. When I reach for the caramels, because I ask myself those questions, I knew I wasn't hungry.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw those caramels, something happened in my stomach. I got this twinge. But what I knew was that what I was feeling was frustration and anger because I couldn't find my credit card. Because if I was hungry, I would have been hungry when I walked out to the car. I would have been hungry when I was in the office looking for it, but I wasn't. It wasn't until I saw those caramels that I got this desire to eat them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was because of what was happening in my environment right then. And so because I said, I'm not hungry, I'm just frustrated, I dealt with the frustration, right? I dealt with the frustration and I didn't eat because I know that eating, and first of all, caramels aren't food. I know that food is not going to solve that frustration. So since I'm real clear that the only problem that food will solve, only problem that food will solve is hunger, unless my problem is hunger, I'm not going to eat. So I have to sit and say, okay, if I'm stressed or if I'm tired, and I, in the old days I said it, oh, I'm tired, I'm going to go home, get something to eat, and go to bed. Well, if I'm tired, I just need to go to bed. I don't need to eat.
What would you say after this part of your journey? Because I'm sure that this is not the end, but what would you say you've learned about yourself?
Oh, my word. Oh, my gosh. Harold, I learn something new every day. And it, what I would say is that I wish I had known, you know, years ago. But I realize now that I had to go through everything that I had to go through in order to be here to be able to tell this story. And the thing is that the journey, one of the mistakes that I made in the past is that, you know, I thought I could lose weight and then I was set, you know, I didn't have to really maintain it. I didn't have to think about maintaining it, and that was the end. And what I now am really clear on is that the journey just continues. But the thing that I didn't know when I started it is that it gets better. It gets better and better every day now that I am living in alignment, now that I have a real notion of what being authentic is, now that I express my emotion rather than eat my emotion, no matter what they happen to be, that I can live in that, and that people want to deal with authenticity.
Yeah.
People want to deal with who I really am and who we really are, and if we are using food as a block to that, we are robbing ourselves and the people around us of opportunity.
Michelle Pettis, and the book is Leaving Large, The Stories of a Food Addict. Congratulations on the book. Congratulations on a better health, a better you, Michelle. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
Happy holidays to you. That is The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, December 21st. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.